You are listening to Spitball with Adri Ballhawk Mellows and Marcus Innuendo Bingo Henson.
Hello, and welcome to the Super Bowl edition of Spitball! I'm your host, Adri Ballhawk Mellows. Joining me as always this week is the King of Innuendo,
Marcus Innuendo Bingo Henson.
How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, good. Well, man, I can't believe it's all over for another year. Pretty gutted, actually. But how did you spend your Super Bowl Sunday, Marcus?
I miss it already. For me, it was... I stayed at home with my dad. Me and my dad like to watch the Super Bowl. Bless him. You know, he gives up around about half time, sort of calls it quits there. And I managed to sort of struggle on through. I must admit, I sort of tuned out and called it a night about three quarters of the way this year. A bit gutted that I didn't see all the way through.
Yeah, but we'll come on to why you're probably just deserved in that. But as always, mine involved the usual food grab. Followed by hours of FIFA with Mickey Big Dog Hog, and of course our annual pre-Super Bowl game of Madden, which over the recent years has determined the actual Super Bowl winner. And this year on Madden, Mickey was Seattle, I was the Broncos, and Seattle won 16-10. So, you know, really we should have seen the Seattle win coming from there. So we go on to the game itself. Super Bowl 48 to the Denver Broncos and Seattle Seahawks. Marcus, where would you like to start on the big game itself?
How about the fastest scoring play in Super Bowl history?
Well, that's always a good place to start. Go for it.
A lot of people were saying that the Seahawks would struggle because they do so well at home but not on the road. But let me tell you, when the first play and the noise in that stadium, even fired TV, we could hear just how loud it was. And you just saw how the noise plus the nerves just got the better of poor, I think it was Ramirez was the centre, is it?
It Ramirez, was Ramirez, or? Yes, that's right, yeah.
Poor guy, just, he saw, obviously clearly saw a little bit of movement. We know that Peyton Manning has a thing about jiggling his leg when he wants a snap to come, sort of like as a silent snap count. Obviously saw some movement and went for the snap, and oh, what a guff.
Yeah, absolutely, just you see Manning walking up to the line, and then they do that slow-mo shot, don't they, where you just see the look of horror come over his face as he just sees the ball go flying past. Yeah, just like...
The eyes wide and the mouth gasp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The last thing you'd want to happen in a Super Bowl, and I suppose luckily, really, Moreno recovered it, otherwise it could have been even worse.
To be fair, the first sort of quarter really summed up for me that he gave me some kind of hope for the Broncos, because, of course, being a Rams fan, I couldn't cheer for the Seahawks. I was quietly rooting for the Broncos. But at the mess up at the first play, okay, understandable, nerves, noise. But then the bend not breaking defense of giving away two field goals back to back, rather than giving up, say, 14 points, I think the fact that they came out of the first quarter only 8-0 down made a really big deal.
Yeah, I think the Denver defense maybe is not getting enough credit because of the, when you look at that scoreline, 43-8, you think that perhaps the Broncos defense didn't play very well. But like you say, the first quarter in particular, they just managed to keep Seattle to field goals despite the really good field position there. I mean, they gave up a couple of big plays as well. Obviously, that big 30-yard run by Harvin as well. But like you say, they gave that up, but still only gave away a field goal. And generally, Russell Wilson didn't have a great... It wasn't like a field day for Russell Wilson, was it? He had to work hard for everything he got.
Yes, yes, it was. It was one of the ones where, you know, we talk about the chess match, and it seemed that for the first sort of part, at the beginning of drives, especially on the first sort of couple and third down, terrible, for Denver to be falling asleep almost and having to play off the back foot and catch up. But then once, of course, maybe you get down into that red zone, shorter field to work with, they really tightened up. And, you know, don't take away, there were some great individual plays. One, I can't think of the linebacker's name, who yanked the ball out of Kirst's hands to stop a touchdown in the first quarter.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right. It wasn't, I'm trying to think whether it was Trevathan.
Wasn't Trevathan?
I don't think it was Trevathan, was it? No. But yeah, I know exactly the play you mean as well, actually. It was just phenomenal. Just, he literally managed to get his classic hit hand in between the receiver's hands and then just rip it out as it was in the back of the end zone, yeah. I'd forgotten about that as well, so well remembered. What about the Cliff Avril performance on that Seattle defensive front?
Wow, I mean, it was quite novel, actually, because they were actually picking it apart, because they highlight the two defensive ends where, I can't remember the name of the right side defensive end for Denver, but he was on the backside contain. The Bronco guy, clearly, he kept overrunning his position.
Right.
Allowing Wilson to break free. There was a few plays where Wilson really made it. There was one where he bootlegged to the left and sort of should have really had a loss of play, but gets free because the defensive end had overrun his assignment. Whereas you looked at Averill and they brought up what he was doing and how he was directing himself to the way the pocket was shifting. He was creating the collapse, but then enveloping it himself. So therefore, there wasn't a chance, because we know Manning is not a mobile quarterback per se, but we know that he can at least understand when he's under pressure. We have seen him be elusive at times. But Averill gave him absolutely no chance for that, and he was constantly in his face, whether it was actually getting pressure on him, i.e. for the interception, where, you know, in his face, or you know, actually getting hands to him. I mean, I don't think he actually got a sack, but the pressure he created was phenomenal.
He did get a lot of hurries, and so you were just comparing the two defensive ends then, just for
how Averill was doing
compared to the Denver defensive end.
There was a part where who's the American pundit on Sky Sports, Reinbold.
Yes.
Where he brought up at halftime the great matchup of the two defensive ends. He's saying this is how Denver have got to play in the second half. They got to play like Averill. Their defensive end is over pursuing the blitz and allowing, therefore, there's a gap behind him for Wilson to escape. And that meant Wilson could do all the little tricks, the nice little pass to Tate in the first half, which, you know, another third down conversion, which should have really, you know, been a nothing or for lost play.
That's it, and the big pass to Baldwin as well.
It's the third down conversions, and I think definitely with the mobility that Wilson has, like you said, he had a really fight for it, but at the same time, you know, when you're completing 72% of your passes, that's a pretty good rating there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're a bit lacking in beast mode, but I think Russell Wilson made up for that with everything he was able to do with the ball. And Denver did a really good job of cutting down on the beast mode runs, didn't they? They kept Lynch either having to go to the outside or them having to use Harvin on a trick play rather than Marshawn Lynch being able to drive up the middle all the time.
Numbers on the day, 15 carries, 39 yards, a touchdown, but 2.6 average. What they really did was they compressed the box, and therefore that meant they were saying to Seattle, Lynch ain't going nowhere. You're going to have to beat us by doing something innovative and risky. But the problem was, once they realized that Manning and his offense had been shut down, then Seattle knew that it was almost like a battle of attrition, where having gone 36 points steaming ahead, when you're 36-0 up and your opponent isn't really into the game, then you know that you can basically just sit back and just sort of almost gently cruise or coast to full time, and the win will be in your court.
Yeah, you almost don't mind going four and out as long as you take as much time off the clock as possible, kind of. That's what they were looking to do.
Exactly. Basically, by the time you got that far ahead, the clock now is against Denver, and the defense just pushed them out of the game with every dying minute. And the offense, when they came on the field, they knew that they just bled the clock dry, because that was Denver's worst enemy.
Yeah, where did Denver go wrong, though? That's what I want to ask you in this game. Why were they so bad against the Seattle defense? We know Seattle defense could be good, but this is the number one offense. They've set record after record this year, but yet somehow they didn't manage to convert that on the big day itself.
Well, for me, what happened was the offensive line. The offensive line didn't come out, it got shaky to start with, and then what happened was that it lost confidence and it was getting beaten. That trench fight was just constantly Seattle, and that puts pressure on the skill positions to try and make something out of nothing. And of course, once you're that far behind, Moreno's almost taken out of the game. I mean, 5 carries, 17 yards. They basically gave up on it because they knew they'd have to do more in the air and have to quick scores to try and get something going.
That's it. And when you look at it, by the end of the game, Manning had attempted 49 passes, which is just crazy, isn't it, really? You can't afford to be doing that against a great defense like Seattle. So, bit of a rout in the end from Seattle, winning it 43-8. Great performance from the Seattle defense, really, all round, and by far one of the most one-sided Super Bowls in a long time.
It was the third, wasn't it? The third biggest points margin.
Yeah, it was tied third biggest with the Bills, yeah, of 35 points. But yeah, so Super Bowl 48, it's been and gone. The season is done, but don't worry because there's still more to come in the show.
They want to eat clock.
Yeah.
They don't care if they put points on the board now. 22 points is enough for that defense, for that team to win this game. Eat clock, and they're good.
You like that, don't you? Look at you, you got him, Sean. You got him.
What you like?
I don't know, Mitch. I must apologize for that.
Now we move on to what grinds Marcus's gears. So, buddy, what's been grinding your gears this week?
You know what really grinds my gears?
The fact that this year has been one of the hardest years for defenses. Now, what I'm talking about is the restriction that's placed upon them. We are looking at the Super Bowl now. A lot of people sitting there going, the defense has won it. Defense wins championships. Then why are we making it so much harder? When clearly, we all love seeing good defenses, and we love the Legion of Boom and all this sort of hype that goes with it, and we love seeing the like the big knockout hits and plays and stuff like this. Why are we making it harder with more restrictions? I understand the safety. I'm completely for it. But why are we making it so that defenses are hitting lower? That's making more injuries. That's reducing the sort of the career lifespan of so many potential players. What we're doing now is we're actually creating a double-edged blade where we're neither or one side. We're creating a problem from a problem. And so now it doesn't make sense to me how we could have come to this point where we've let it get to this point that we're now having to think about this. Really, in my mind, defenses should have been allowed to do what defenses do, and that's hit. Now, protecting players, head, understandable. But at the same time, you've got to be able to allow that sometimes when you're swinging the shoulder and you go for the other guy's shoulder, your heads might clash together. It's a sense of the game. It's just a part of your body's just natural reactions. But at the same time, over nannying the state is reducing the effectiveness of football. Now, I mean, we look at it, we understand that safety among the fears that as well players' concerns and the players have lodged their campaigns, heads up football and stuff like that, they should be taken on. At the same time, you can't make it hard for these guys because that's a third of the game right there. You've got offense, defense, and special teams. If we lose a third of the game, we might as well have lost the game. And that's what ground my gears.
Well, on that note, actually, with the concussions, because that is obviously a big theme in the NFL at the moment, there's a program, if you get a chance to watch it, you will have to, or you have to try and get it on, find it on YouTube or something. But I today watched the program on PBS America, and it was NFL, The Denial of Concussion. And it was a really good documentary. It was in two parts, both an hour long. And it went through the scientists that have actually been examining dead NFL players. They've been examining their brains and looking at brain damage and things like that. And I think if you were to watch that program and how, when you see all of the neuroscientists, neurosurgeons, what they have to say about it. And there's a guy who some may know from WWE, Chris Nowinski, who used to be a college football player, and then instead of going into pro football, actually went into wrestling. But based on his head injuries, he actually had to retire from there. But he's actually now the co-director for the Boston University Center for the Study of Brain Damage, effectively. And when you watch his program, the amount of players that they've actually been able to examine, 45 out of 46 players that they've examined actually had CTE. And the scary thing is, two of the brains they've examined, one was a 21-year-old who was playing college football, who unfortunately died, and another one even more tragic than that was an 18-year-old playing high school football that had died after his fourth concussion. He died about a week later after his fourth concussion. So I think I agree that they need to do something to make it not as hard to defend, but at the same time, after watching this today, safety 100% comes first. And as I say, you'll totally agree if you watch this documentary, because you have to think about that. We all love the game and we don't want to see the game change, but then there's also a lot of people like us that don't actually want the players to have a shortened life because of playing the game that we love. I mean, the average life expectancy of an NFL player is 55 years old, and that's not very old at all, is it, buddy? So I think I agree with you in parts, but trust me, watch this program, The Denial of Concussion, and you'll see exactly why the NFL are trying to make it harder and harder for you to smash heads.
Tim Tebow here. Everyone thinks I want a contract, but without one, I've done so much this year.
Nervous father's the mic! Why 20 motions?
Is that Tim Tebow?
Why did he breathe? Hot, hot!
Without a contract?
There he is.
I've tackled the unknown. Worked on my delivery.
I mean, talk about a legal use of their hands, right?
And improved my mental game. If I had a contract, I couldn't do my own stunts.
or save these puppies. If I had a contract,
I wouldn't be with all you fine people tonight!
You might want to hold on to those donuts.
I've accomplished so much.
Salam Bill Dunya, Salam Bill Dunya, Salam Bill Dunya.
Even fulfilled a childhood dream.
Bottom line, contracts hold you back.
Am I right, Iceland? You know what I'm talking about.
Switch to T-Mobile and we'll buy you out of yours.
Now we move on to our awards. That's right, we only had one game to pick them from this week, but still we did it anyway. We have our offensive impact
player,
otherwise known as our award, and our defensive impact
player,
or Mr.
Ray Lewis
award. So Marcus, this week we're going to start with, and as there was only one game, we're going to just do winners this week. So who was your winner?
My winner of the Megatron Award this week, I gave it to Percy Harvin, wide receiver for Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, that's a fair shout. He did have a massive impact on the game with his runs, with his return ability. I'm sure you're going to fill us in now, though, who misses.
Well, he had two rushes for 45 yards, one reception for 5 yards, but it was that 87-yard kickoff return to start the second half that really sort of put some impact on the game and really almost called it time for the Denver Broncos' chances to come back. And I think, really, the way they used him was he was that the other guy. You saw that, how they had to almost double-team him because they were so alert about what he did. And the reverses, we saw the reverse. The first time they pulled the reverse, he broke it for 30 yards, and then, of course, they came back to the play that was so good, and it went for another 15 yards. So he really sort of stretched the play and made like Denver have to think about the exteriors and defending them as well. Putting the fear of God into the defensive players, sometimes getting inside a defensive player's mind is actually worth more in terms of impact than actually getting 100 yards receiving on the day.
Yeah, I totally agree. And to be honest, purely because I like to be different, that's the only reason why I didn't pick Percy Harvin this week. He obviously did have a massive impact on that game. I actually myself went with another one of the Seattle receiving corps and someone who I've been talking about quite a lot on the show recently, and that is Doug Baldwin. On the day,
yeah, making a nice little name for himself. Yeah,
he is big time. Yeah, 5 catches, 66 yards. That touchdown where he just managed to creep his way into the end zone. People just couldn't tackle him. And more importantly, when you look at the stats, he caught everything thrown at him. 5 targets. 5 receptions, that's impact right there. The guy doesn't drop a ball, he makes the clutch plays, and he's become a real weapon for that Seattle offense, and steps up when Percy Harvin's not in the game.
Also, I mean, thinking of that, like you said, the targets, twice was on third down, which he both converted, which is, you know, it's such an important aspect of the game people don't think about.
Yep, it's all about those, that game of inches and the moments and everything else, as they say. So now we move on to the Mr.
Ray Lewis
award. And who was your winner this week?
Well, I know a lot of it's going to seem like maybe it's a little bit obvious as far as my one goes, because, you know, I didn't really think, you know, really pulled it that. But for me, really defensively, I could have given it to the entire team, to be fair, the entire Seattle defense. But I went for Malcolm Smith, Super Bowl game MVP, linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, again, that's a completely fair shout. And if you'd have given it to the whole team, then I know someone that wouldn't have been too happy with that. Isn't that right, Mark?
You know what really grinds my gears?
Yeah, absolutely. He hates it when we give it to a whole team rather than just one individual. So I'm glad you did actually manage to pick someone, and fair play giving it to the Super Bowl MVP, which for once was a defensive player. Despite your little rant beforehand about how it's hard to defend, look at that, Super Bowl MVP was a defender. My Mr.
Ray Lewis
award winner this week, whilst Malcolm Smith ended up getting the benefit of this guy's plays, which is why I've gone for him, my winner is Cliff Avril from Seattle Seahawks defense. 3 tackles, 2 pass deflections, of course, one of them leading to that pick 6 from Malcolm Smith. He was hurrying Manning all day, and the offensive line just didn't know how to handle him. And all that pressure he put on the Denver offense, for me, again, that was his impact. It wasn't necessarily recorded in the stats, but when you watch the game back and you see how much his involvement in everything good that Seattle did, that's why I've picked him as my Mr.
Ray Lewis
award winner. Congratulations then to our award winners in Doug Baldwin and Percy Harvin. and also our Mr.
Ray Lewis
award winners, Cliff Avril and Malcolm Smith, both of the Seattle Seahawks.
It's football on your phone, that's what I said.
It's football on your phone, you can watch it in bed.
Take it with you wherever you go.
Show your friends and watch them all go ho!
It's football on your phone.
Yeah.
It's football on your phone.
To finish off this week, I wanted to finish with the return of the quiz, so you can all see how great Marcus's football knowledge is. How is your Super Bowl knowledge, Marcus, and are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready for it. Super Bowl knowledge, yeah, not so much.
Okay, in which case, music please, maestro. Question
1.
What is the longest play in Super Bowl history?
Oh, is that Desmond Howard's 99-yard return?
Desmond Howard's 99-yard return.
Yeah.
Which was when, and was it an interception return, or are you thinking the kickoff return, or are you?
I can't remember. Oh, what, when was it? It was Packers. I know Packers. Yeah.
Are you thinking of Randall Cobb?
No.
Okay. Well, you're not really on the right lines if you're thinking Packers. Think a bit more recent.
Oh, wait a minute. Was it Jacoby Jones last year? He had a massive return.
He did. How long was it? And was it the longest play?
Was it 101 yards or something silly like that from inside the end zone?
It may or may not have been. What is your final answer?
Kickoff return for 101 yards by Jacoby Jones last year.
Ooh, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you half a point for that. Because it was Jacoby Jones, but it was 108 yards kickoff return in Super Bowl 47.
Ah.
So, not a bad start, half a point. Better start than last time, I feel. Right. Question
2.
What team has won the most Super Bowls?
Is it the black and yellow of Pittsburgh Steelers?
It is. And to complete it for a point, how many have they won?
Oh, I think it's 5?
Oh man, you're so close. I'm going to give you half a point for getting it's Pittsburgh.
Is it 6?
It is.
Ah.
So you're getting close because you've got half a point on each of those. So we're getting there.
1 out of 2 is not bad, eh?
Yeah, exactly. 1 out of 2 is 50%, mate. It's not bad. So, question
3.
Who had the longest time between Super Bowl wins as a player, and how long was the gap?
Was that Mr.
Ray Lewis?
It was.
Let's see, he won it last year, which is... See, do we count that as 2013 last year, or was that 2012-13?
No, because it was the 2012 season, so you count it as 2012.
Okay, count as 2012, and he won it in 2001, so that would be 11 years.
Well, it would have been, but the 2001 season, sorry, the 2001 year he won it in would have been the 2000 season. So, 12 seasons.
Oh.
Schoolboy math.
Technicality.
Yeah, but I'm afraid, so now you're at 1.5 out of 3, keeping that 50%.
That's how I roll.
Yeah, well, there's only a couple more questions, mate, so the pain may be very short-lived. Question
4.
What is the lowest QB rating to ever win a game, and who was it?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that one I thought I'd really, yeah, test you.
Lowest QB rating?
Yeah. You get half a point for each. You get half a point for the rating and half a point for naming which quarterback it was.
Oh my word.
But I'd give you an extra bonus 2 points if you got the Super Bowl it was in.
Was it... I wouldn't be surprised if you put in one of your... you know what, I'm going to say the lowest ever QB rating would be somewhere in the 60s.
To ever win a game, this is, don't forget.
I mean, a QB rating of 60.
Okay. Your final answer?
Yeah, 60. On, rather than the 60s, I'll go give or take 60. 6-0.
And which quarterback are you going to say?
Yeah. Was it recent or is it in the early days?
It may or may not have been recent.
Curse you.
It was in the last 20 years, I'll give you that.
In the last 20 years. No, I'm going to have a mighty big pass there, I'm afraid.
Just name a quarterback that plays in the NFL or has played in the NFL.
Who might have a really poor
rating like winning a Super Bowl.
In the last 20 years, was it, I don't know, someone like Aikman or someone?
Oh, no. Okay. And you're going to take a stab at the Super Bowl year?
I think it would have been early 90s, so I'm going to take a stab at 1990 itself.
Okay. I'm afraid to tell you, you were wrong on all three counts. If this was Family Fortunes, we'd be passing it over to the other family.
with a great big...
Exactly, yep. It was Super Bowl 40. Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, against Seattle.
Yep, and a QB rating of 22.6. Pretty bad, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's terrible.
Nice and right. Okay, we'll be pleased to know that this is now the final question. Question
5.
What is the largest margin of victory in the Super Bowl?
Is it something...
Now, you probably know what this is because you obviously saw the stat flash up during the Super Bowl, because when you previously mentioned the 35 points from this game.
Yeah, that's right. This was the third biggest. I'm trying to remember. So, is it 42? 42 seems to be sticking in my brain.
Okay.
Yes, Chris, I want to select answer 42.
Oh man, Family Fortunes time again.
45.
Can you remember the game and the Super Bowl though? Because there's bonus points on offer.
Oof. Was it Super Bowl? Super Bowl 3 or Super Bowl 4? It's one of the really early ones, wasn't it?
Well, this is for you to tell me.
I think it was one of the really early ones, like 3 or 4. Though you'll probably make me have to be specific, so I'm going to say 4. And as for teams, I seem to recall something like Chicago versus someone.
Right, no, I'm going to save you.
Put me out of my misery. Put me out of my misery. Yep. It's awful.
It was Super Bowl 24.
24. I had a 4.
The one you were thinking of. Yeah, the one you were thinking of was probably, remember the last quiz we did where Chicago had the biggest margin of victory in a playoff game by about 70 points. But the biggest margin of victory in a Super Bowl, 45 points. Super Bowl 24, the 49ers over the Broncos, 55-10. So,
yeah.
All in all, let's total up your points. One and a half out of five, so that's half a point better than your previous effort.
Hey, I'm improving!
And yeah, to be fair, I kind of put you on the spot and just threw the quiz out. You didn't really give you much time to research, so fair play to you for doing that.
Football on your phone.
If you're taking out a small loan.
Football on your phone.
When you're sitting on your throne.
Football on your phone.
When you're buttering a scone.
Football on your phone. It's like I spilled milk all over your blouse by accident or on purpose. It's like the milk is like football and your blouse is the phone.
It's football on your phone.
Well, that just about wraps it up for another season of NFL action. But be sure to check out our 2013 season review with all of the English crew here at Ball Hawk's Nest, which will be coming to you in the next couple of weeks. But until next time, football fans, stay safe, take care, and thanks for stopping by.